Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me right here on Facebook. Follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, Twitter. I'm all over the place. Thanks. It's been a, I don't know, this is in the city of Chicago, the weather-wise, it's been totally, totally unseasonably warm for this type of this time of the year. And it's weird, but hey, we're loving it. We're loving it. And our Cubbies are in Cleveland tonight. Their back's up against the wall once again, and who knows what's going to happen. We're just going to say, go Cubbies, go Cubbies. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We have author David Passara, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's going to be talking about domestic violence, something that's a topic and a subject that's dear to my heart because there's too much of that going on, and it's been going on since the end of time, since the beginning of time, I'm sorry. And it's something that we just got to get a handle on. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to have some fun today, folks. We're going to be talking about the election and all that kind of thing. And it should be fun. An hour and a half should be great. All right, let's go to the phones. You are on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, George Wilder, it's Dave Pizarro.
Okay, all righty. I got you right here on my screen. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us a little bio, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. I am a father's rights, men's rights lawyer in Los Angeles. I've written three books on men, A Man's Guide to Divorce Strategy, one for child custody, and A Man's Guide to Domestic Violence. I am in the process right now of doing a documentary called What About the Men? We've been traveling the country, filming in various domestic violence shelters, doing research, pulling together men's stories who have been victims of domestic violence. And we're trying to shine a light on the fact that men are often the victims, but nobody wants to talk about the fact that they can be victims of domestic violence. They're always talking about men as the perpetrators. So
right.
One of the things we're trying to do is to break the cycle, is to bring light to the whole issue and recognize that women and men are both perpetrators and women and men are both victims. And it's a bigger topic than just.
Would you say
the high
percentage of domestic violence is caused by the male?
Studies do not actually bear that out, and a lot of it has to do with the definition of what's domestic violence. You know, they, depending on who you're talking to, they like to parse it down, because what they'll say is, well, women might perpetrate more domestic violence when you call it nagging and emotional harassment and psychological harassment, But when a man hits a woman, he's going to do more damage, so therefore she's the bigger victim. And I tend to disagree with that because I look at the perspective of women can be meaner to men emotionally and with words, and those can have much longer term damages than just a quick hit or a slap. And so the long-term damages that are done to boys by their mothers, by boys, by their girlfriends emotionally, can take a lot longer to heal. And that's something that we have to talk about. Now, I'm not saying that men should be hitting women because I'm not for that at all. I don't think that's appropriate. But I also don't think it's appropriate for women to be hitting men. And I don't think it's appropriate for women or men to be playing emotional abuser on their spouses.
I totally agree. And I do agree that there are some women out here just as guilty as domestic violence as men, because, you know, I have seen it. I've been a part of it. And sometimes, you know, you can be in a really, really awful relationship where the woman herself might egg you on into assaulting her physically, and something that a man may not want to do.
And frankly, that happens with great regularity. It's not something that domestic violence shelters or service providers or victims advocates are ever going to want to acknowledge, because it flies right in the face of the narrative that women are always the victim. And we don't want to look at the fact that there's precursor behavior, that it is possible to egg somebody on to the point where they lose their ability to control their emotions, that this does happen, that people do reach their breaking points, because it's kind of a political dogma that you're not allowed to ever lose your temper, that if you do lose your temper, there's something wrong with you. And when we take men and we say, listen, the only emotion we're going to allow you to have is anger, and then we're going to take even that away from you, and then we have men that explode, it's kind of like, well, what did you expect? You didn't give them any way to express their emotions.
Yeah.
It's bad news. I mean, I do trainings over at the Children's Institute here in Los Angeles. I train their staff on domestic violence and domestic violence procedures and restraining orders. And the group conversations we get into about what people have grown up with, what the expectations are that men will be, the roles that they'll play, what women will play, it's really a very multifaceted problem. And until we start having these uncomfortable discussions that, you know, women can pick on men until the point where they get angry and do something stupid, like backhand them, we're not going to ever acknowledge that women have a role in this and that their behavior needs to be checked also.
Exactly. What are some of the signs of what are some of the first signs of there's possibly domestic violence or hitting going on in a relationship?
If you are feeling uncomfortable in the relationship, if you're being demeaned, if you're not being uplifted by your spouse, whether it's male or female, there's a problem. And we need to take a look at, well, A, why is that happening? Why are they treating you that way? But then B, why are you tolerating it? Now, a lot of times there's a continuum, and it starts with the little nagging comments of, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you don't make enough money, or it's your job, or you're supposed to do this. And that's sort of like the first part of destroying somebody's ego and self-esteem. And that when that's happening, you'll have that feeling in your gut that this is just not fun. It's not right. And when that's happening, that's the very beginnings of domestic violence in a relationship between adults. Now, you can have that similar thing between parents and children. And that happens often, particularly with mothers and teenage boys, because a mother is going to look at a teenage boy and she can't necessarily control him physically anymore like when he was 5 years old. So what's she going to do? Now she's going to turn to demeaning words, controlling words, damaging words, emotional control. And that's the sort of stuff that's going to create long-term damage that's going to play out 5-10 years down the road when he's in a relationship with another adult. But the cycle's going to continue itself.
Yeah, this is what I've been hearing since I guess, been on Earth. pertaining to domestic violence, that a lot of women are used to being treated in a very physical way, because they, as little girls, as you say, little girls, maybe they were beaten by their parents or whatever when they were small, 5, 6, 7 years old, and then they grow up to never grow out of that cycle of wanting to be beaten. So they go out and find some guy that's gonna do that. Do you buy that?
Absolutely. If you look at parents that beat their children, mm-hmm. that child is going to internalize that that is the way an adult treats a child. So then they're going to turn around, and when they get into a relationship, that's when they have, when they become a parent themselves, they're going to repeat that cycle. Also, when you have a child who is beaten by a parent, whether it's mother or father, mm-hmm. they're going to internalize that that sort of attention is attention, good or bad. It's attention. They're paying attention to me, and they will internalize that as love.
And wow, you know what? You're right. You're right about that, because I overheard it. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I overheard a conversation between two young girls. I was just walking by, and I heard a conversation. And one of the girls was saying that if her boyfriend did not beat her, it meant that he did not love her. And I thought that was just appalling.
It is appalling, but it's also very much a cultural norm in certain cultures.
Yeah.
Because it
yeah.
shows the level of passion and how much I love you is how much I'm willing to control you.
So some women believe that.
Absolutely. Mm. Because think about it. We've got a whole culture that also says, what's a man supposed to do? He's supposed to find a woman and then protect and control her. So if another man comes along, he's willing to fight for his woman, right? This is kind of a cultural norm. But then that's also got a whole ownership aspect of, well, she is his. So in order for her to feel like she is owned and controlled and protected and loved, we get into a whole physical control aspect. Is he controlling where she can go? Is she controlling who she can talk to? It's a short step
controlling.
To go from that to hitting her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all part of a progressive spectrum.
Yeah. So why do you think a lot of these women in these type of relationships stay with their abuser?
There's many, many reasons why people stay.
There's financial reasons.
There's an emotional enmeshment. There's a belief mm-hmm. that the other person's going to change. There's the belief that this is how people demonstrate love. This is how you love me. This is how I saw my mother and my father interact. They fought. So if you're fighting with me, that must mean you love me. So we've got that whole imaging of what I saw as a child is what I'm going to play out as an adult. There's all sorts of other aspects of the controlling nature of these relationships, from the who owns the phones to who owns the apartment or the house and the cars, and then who's going to get the kids and who's going to believe me if I go to the police? Are the police really going to believe me? They might or might not, depending on who I am and whether or not I'm coming in with bruises or is it just words. It's a very complex issue, and part mm-hmm. of it is mm-hmm. so often that we're just replaying what we saw as children.
So in other words,
We always want to go back to what we saw as a child.
In other words, in some cultures and in some areas, some neighborhoods, this is just the normal way of doing things.
Absolutely.
And it's accepted. And it's accepted.
Completely. You know, we see a lot of it in the African American community mm-hmm. because this is exactly, you know, how does a single mother handle her child? She beats him. How does he know that he's loved? Because he's being beaten. What's going to happen when he grows up? He's going to turn around and repeat those lessons because that's what he's learned. We saw that, was it last year or the year or a year ago? I forget the football player who was accused of child abuse because he was using a, I think it was a belt on his daughter, the same way that his mother had used a belt on him. He didn't see that there was anything wrong.
I think he plays for the
Vikings.
Because when
he was growing up, that was normal. Yeah, I want to say he played for the Vikings, too. I forget his name, but...
Peterson. Peterson.
On a regular basis. Yeah. Yes.
I can't think of his first name.
Adrian Peterson, maybe?
Adrian Peterson. I'm thinking it's Adrian Peterson, but I don't think he's a running back anymore. But anyway, we know who we're talking about.
Right. But see, that's the thing, is when we have patterns that are set in childhood, those are, unless somebody intervenes and says, this is wrong, this can't continue, we're just going to repeat them in our adulthood. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing the documentary I am, is because unless we start exposing the problem of how women are aggressive inappropriately with men, we're never going to get to the point of being able to stop it. We're only going to be able to deal with the guys that get abused so long that then they blow a gasket, they do something stupid, and now they're the evil abusers, but we've never looked at the precursor behavior that led to it.
Yeah. What is the purpose of shelters for battered women? I mean, how do they turn someone's life around after going through domestic violence? Whether it's a shelter for battered women, battered men, what are some of the things that they offer to turn these people's lives around?
Okay, so we get several things going on there. The purpose of a domestic violence shelter globally is to get somebody out of a dangerous situation where they're in actual physical harm if they don't move out of the environment they're in. They're convinced they're going to get beaten or killed. Their children are going to get beaten or killed. So we're going to put them into a safe environment and allow them to get their life back on track. Put a restraining order in place against the abuser, and then have some wraparound services like job training, job placement, resume development. Usually there's therapy, some sort of support group attached. Usually there's something along with finding government aid to help people get back on track. So we've got all of those wraparound services that help someone who's probably been fairly isolated, because usually what ends up happening is the abuser isolates the abused from their family, from their friends, to such a degree that they're kind of shell-shocked, and they have to like find a way back to the world. So they're kind of scared, but part of what a shelter does is it helps people decompress and get back into being part of the world again. So that's, what shelters are for in general. Shelters target women primarily. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you said something about restraining orders, and a lot of those restraining orders does not work. If this guy want to get to the girl, he's going to get to the girl. I mean, there's been so many restraining orders put on some of these abusers, and they just, you know, ignore it and go hunt this woman down and basically shoots her. And I have been saying on this show many times, if you do not do something, if you're in a relationship that's abusive, you should get out of it. Because if you keep going back and back and back, this guy's going to think you like being beaten. And if you put out a restraining order on him, he's going to come after you and he's going to kill you. It happens.
It definitely does happen, not as often as a lot of the headlines would have you believe. Restraining orders are definitely not going to stop somebody that's really hell-bent on doing physical harm.
Exactly.
It's the ones that are they're on sort of the approach to getting to physical harm. They're on the ramp towards getting to a higher level of abuse where the restraining order is most effective. It's the giant stop sign that says, dude, stop, hold on. We got to like rethink this whole relationship. That's the important part. You know, it's not going to be a panacea for everybody. Restraining orders have been very effective in many cases. They've been heavily abused by a lot of people. it's a very, again, murky, multifaceted problem dealing with restraining orders.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. On the one hand, today they have been issued, they're issued very easily, which means it's easy to abuse them, which also means that it's easy for an abuser to turn the tables and say that they are the victim against the real victim. So it's a hard thing to deal with when we're talking about restraining orders and relationships.
Yeah.
And to figure out, yeah. like, is it really useful in this relationship, or is it just another form of abuse?
Author David Pissarro. I was going to say, author David Pissarro on the George Wilde, talking domestic violence, right ahead.
You had mentioned domestic violence shelters for women and men. Currently, there is only mm-hmm. one domestic violence shelter in the country for men. It's called Taylor House. It's in Batesville, Arkansas. There is a second one that is slated to open in November down in Dallas, Texas, but I don't know that it's actually open yet. The only one I know of is currently in Batesville, Arkansas, called Taylor House. Other than that, most shelters are designed for women. They target women. They are staffed by women. If a man calls, they will generally not really accept them. They will provide services, which means that they will give a man a motel room chit and allow him to go sleep at the Motel 6 down the road. But that denies him access to a lot of those wraparound services I was talking about, like government aid and resume and job finding.
I would assume that some of these shelters, some of these women's shelters, probably will not accept the man because they feel that the men are the culprits of all of this.
Depending on the state, that is definitely true. Like in California, mm-hmm. by law, they're supposed to accept men, but they find ways to get around that.
And the way
that they do it is they just shunt them off to like a hotel or a motel down the road.
Okay.
They also limit the age at which boys can come in. You know, they generally won't accept families if there is a boy who's over the age of 12. So that's not a good thing.
David, can we talk about your books?
Sure. A Man's Guide to Divorce Strategy is is the first book I wrote. It's available on Amazon as a hard copy, or you can go to my website, mensfamilylaw.com, and you can download an ebook version of it. I've got mm-hmm. one for child custody if we're not married, but we've got a child that we need to deal with. And I have one on domestic violence and how it's used strategically in a child custody or a divorce case. They're short books. They're only about maybe 100 pages, designed to be easily uh-huh. read that somebody gets the information they need right away. And then we can do more research and dig into what somebody really needs to have done.
I was going to say something on child custody, but I think that's one of the most information some people would need because of the high divorce rate. You know, I was even involved in child custody. So, you know, that would be totally, totally up my alley to read that and go through that and probably, you know, get some valuable information from your book.
Well, thank you. You know, the book is designed because there are fewer and fewer people getting married these days, but they continue to have children. So we're dealing with more child custody issues. We're dealing with single moms mm-hmm. and single dads and girlfriend boyfriends that all of a sudden are finding them in the wacky world of being a parent, but no idea how to co-parent, because that's the whole concept of both parents have to work in concert for the children's best interest.
Yeah.
And so when we get into custody battles, they can get really nasty really quickly. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote A Man's Guide to Child Custody, to give men sort of a short course on here's the stuff you need to be looking at and paying attention to when you're in one of these battles.
All right, give us your website again.
It's Men's
where we can find these books.
Law.
Mm-hmm.
The e-books are on mensfamilylaw.com, and the hard copies mm-hmm. are available on Amazon. And if you want, mm-hmm. you can listen to my podcast, which is also Men's Family Law, available on iTunes, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. I interview people to talk about child custody and parenting plans and psychologists. We've got all sorts of great information there. There's tons of great info on the website to help people get through these divorces and child custody battles, and unfortunately, even in the domestic violence ones.
How are you doing so far with this? Are you being successful with this?
Well, it's paid my rent, my partner's mortgage, and kept my dog in kibble for the last 17 years. So, yeah, we've been successful.
All right. Thanks for being on the show, Guy. You were great. Bye-bye.
Thanks, George. My favorite. Take care.
You too. All right. That was author David Pesara on the George Wilder Jr. Show talking domestic violence. Folks, we will be right back. Here we go.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
I am Jesse Dollimore for the Occupy Democrats Report. Look, Donald Trump for quite a while has been calling Hillary Clinton Crooked Hillary. But who's the real crook? Donald Trump, without reservation, is not only crooked, he is an admitted sexual assaulter of women. What you might not know is that he's also an accused brutal child rapist. And this isn't some conspiracy theory, folks. In fact, on December 16th, Donald Trump will head to court to defend himself against allegations that he raped a 13-year-old girl at a sex party thrown by his good buddy and convicted child rapist, Jeffrey Epstein. If you want proof, here are the actual court documents from the lawsuit, which a federal court thought had enough merit to deserve a trial. The woman, who was then 13, alleges that after she was lured to one of Epstein's criminal parties for promises of a modeling contract, Donald Trump tied her to a bed, exposed himself, and began to savagely rape her. Again, a 13-year-old virgin. Court documents revealed that her loud screaming for him to stop was met with more violence and threats of killing her. If you're not familiar with Donald Trump's pal Jeffrey Epstein, consider yourself lucky. In 2008, he pled guilty to a charge of soliciting prostitution from girls as young as 14. The FBI is said to have identified about 40 potential victims. Donald Trump has nothing but praise for Epstein, telling New York Magazine in an interview, "I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's been a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side. No doubt about it, Jeffrey enjoys his social life." Ugh. Not social life, raping children. Rather than be repulsed by this aberrant behavior, Donald Trump compliments Epstein. He even compares himself to him. It's decision time, America. We clearly do not want a president with such wildly questionable morals. If true, Donald Trump belongs behind bars with child rapists. He's not fit to lead us into the next decade. On November 8th, we need to all do our part. Donald Trump must.
I totally agree. This guy must be stopped. I mean, there is no doubt about it, folks. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio, Internet Radio. This is a popular show, but you know, November 8th is a few days away from the date of this show. Okay, Donald Trump has to be stopped, and Donald Trump, it's just awful the way the media is not talking about or ramming this down the throat of Americans on the fact that this guy is a predator, possibly a rapist. We know that he assaults women. I mean, it was on tape that he does it, that he admits he does it. He's got two court dates coming up right after the election, in this month of November, December. And who knows how many other lawsuits he has to go to court on. This guy is not fit to be commander in chief. This guy should be in chains, in jail somewhere. But the media, the corporate media, does not want us to hear this. They don't. If this was a Democrat with all this baggage, do you think that the Republicans would let this guy run for president? Do you think they would let him? They're talking about emails. Hillary Clinton's emails, there's been no proof. They're still reading them. They're coming up with nothing, probably, hopefully, I believe. And Donald Trump, all he's doing is talking about her emails. Clinton's emails, email this, email that, email. What about his rape allegations? What about all these women coming out saying that he sexually assaulted them? When you kiss someone without their permission, that's sexual assault. You grab someone, you grab someone's body part, that's without their knowledge or their consent, that's sexual assault. And Donald Trump has been doing that all of his life. It's on tape. He's doing it. He's in photographs and videos, you know, allegedly doing these things. It's all over the place. But yet, all of the media seems to focus on is Hillary's emails. One of Trump's surrogates was out and about around the media circuit. And when asked about Donald Trump's court date, criminal court dates coming up, hearings, she said, well, Hillary's got emails. Give me a break. The media has been a disservice to Hillary Clinton and a boom for Donald Trump, because they're not mentioning or talking about these rape allegations, all of these women coming out saying all of these women are not liars. Maybe none of them are liars. But we have to get in the ass of the media, because they're in the pockets of the Republicans. And you got all these Republicans supporting Donald Trump. You got all these idiots out here, his supporters, his deplorable supporters. You know, they don't give a damn. They don't give two shits about what Donald Trump has done to women or done to little children. They don't care. They just know that Donald Trump is their man. He's going to build a wall. He's going to throw out all the immigrants and the refugees, and he's going to kick their asses out and send everybody back to Mexico. You know, this is all what they're thinking about. Donald Trump says what he's going to do once he gets in the office. He can't do no more than any other president. He's got to have a legislature to do anything. And most of those guys don't like him. You know, and most of those guys, the Republican, a lot of the Republican women don't like it. I mean, they admit it. So they don't think he's fit to be president. They're women. and they're concerned about his verbiage. But my problem here is that the media, the mainstream media, they are not attacking Donald Trump enough on some of these rape charges, folks, and some of these sexual assaults that he bragged about, talked about, taunted women. And we know he's a serial liar. And he's and all the hate speech and the violence that he provokes and incites. You know, this guy is just, some people are saying he's mentally ill. You know, I'm going to buy that, because I don't know if he's mentally ill or not, or just crazy. But I do know that the guy is not fit to be president of the United States. Okay, we have our problems with Clinton. I would have loved to have seen Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, this would not be happening if Bernie Sanders would have been the nominee instead of Clinton. The only reason why Bernie Sanders is not the nominee, because of Debbie Wasserman's show. When she was the head of the DNC, Democratic National Congress, she manipulated and sabotaged Bernie Sanders. That's why he's not here. He had the backing. He had the supporters. You know, he was more loved than Clinton. Now we got two of the worst candidates in Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and we have to, you know, make up our minds. And some people are just saying, the hell with them both. They're writing in other candidates' names. I wanted to write in Bernie Sanders. And it's just awful, folks. This presidential election is just one of the most awful ones that I ever been a part of. And, you know, that I ever been a part of. This is just terrible. Okay, let's talk about where we stand with the voting. My understanding now, right here, is that 26 million people have already voted, and we got 1 week to go before the election. 26 million people. And the majority of these votes are, if not all, are early votes. These are early voters. These are votes before the FBI and James Comey tried to sabotage the election and sabotage Clinton. 26 million people already voted. This is early voting, and early voting, folks, and I've said this several times, tends to benefit the Democrats, and the Republicans know it. This is why they try to suppress the vote, because they don't like this. They don't like this. Probably another 26 million is going to vote on November 8th. The actual date of the election. And it's going to be something. Wow. 26 million people already voted in the election. And usually early voting, you know, benefits the Democrats. All right. Donald Trump is out there saying that he's going to appeal Obamacare. He's going to appeal Obamacare. There are some folks who are still signing up for it. And then there are some folks that are going to be priced out of it because it's going up. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. I never was a lover of Obamacare. I thought it just didn't go far enough. And I thought it benefited the insurance companies more so than it benefited the insurers, the people who wanted to be insured. And now the prices are going up, and you don't hear one thing from Obama about it. This is his legacy. Now, I never liked it. I never cared for it. I never opt into it, because I was one of those people, those independent voters who wanted single payer. We pushed for single payer. Obama did not want single payer. Rahm Emanuel, who was in the White House at the time, chief of staff, he did not want single payer. And I've always said Obamacare was an atrocity, Remember when Obama came? I mean, he would run, go in front of the cameras almost each and every day and say, hey, blah, 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 you can choose your own doctor. You can choose your own doctor. Finding out you cannot choose your own doctor. Blah, 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 your premiums will never go up. Your premiums never go up. The premiums are going up. They are going up. And he says he's going to appeal this. Excuse me. He says he's going to repeal this and come up with something of his own. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. There are still people, even though I may not like Obamacare, but that's not going to make me vote for Trump. No way. But I think it stinks. I never liked it. I felt that there are some people who could get, I mean, if you were very, very low income, you couldn't get Obamacare. You had to be of a certain income bracket in order to get Obamacare. And that blew my mind, because I thought everybody who was seeking health care, no matter what their income was, they could opt into Obamacare. But that was not the case. That was not the case. Okay, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are heading to the goal line. And as they are heading to the goal line, they are attacking each other viciously. Hillary is out there saying that Trump and women, she's using women against Trump. You know, I mean, she can't seem to find anything else to say but women. But there's a whole lot of things. What she should be saying out there on the stump is that Donald Trump has 2 court dates in criminal court. Why isn't she saying that? Democrats are weak. Democrats are weak. They always have been weak. They are the nice ones. The Republicans are the bullies. And when you're not the nice one and you have bullies, who's going to win that fight? The bullies are going to win that fight because you're not standing up to a bully. You're not. Republicans are bullies, and they don't stand up to the bullies. Oh, they'll sit behind their big desk and behind a television camera and, you know, talk all they want to about what's right and what's wrong. But when it comes down to it, they won't stand up to bullies. They've always been weak. They've always caved in. They always given in. Democrats do not fight. Just like Rahm Emanuel. I think he gave in to the teachers union. He caved in. He kept telling them that he didn't have any money, that the city didn't have any money. And some of us believe that. Suddenly, the teachers threatened to strike, calling him all kind of liars and all kind of bad names, you know, and suddenly he caved and found the money. Well, then why are you telling the rest of us that the city was broke and the city had no money? You just lied. You know, you lied and you gave in to the teachers. These teachers were about nothing but money. They didn't give a shit about the students. It was about their bottom line. And he caved. And this is what a lot of Democrats do. They cave in to pressure. Even if it's light pressure or no pressure, they cave. They're weak. And then they jump their asses on television and say, hey, wow, this was a good thing. You know, and the Republicans... these guys are bullies, but they win. They win by bullying. They win with bullying. The Democrats, they're on the right message, but they don't know how to fight. In some cases, you got to fight fire with fire, because if you don't fight fire with fire, you're the one that's going to get burned. Hillary is weak. Obama is weak. The Democrats are weak asses. Hillary should hit Trump where it hurts. She knows that he's got 2 court dates coming up. Why doesn't she hit him on that when she's out there campaigning? That would maybe bring her back into fold. Because right now, with the FBI interjecting itself into this election, you know, with this bombshell email, she has lost some ground. We were all hoping that she would landslide this guy, but now she may just, if she wins, she'll win by a few points. I kind of take it that Clinton is untrustworthy. she is someone that you probably couldn't rely on, because she's going to change her mind. She's going to do this. But at any rate, she's better than Donald Trump. You know, I mean, she's more presidential than Donald Trump. She's got the experience. She's got the temperament. You know, she's been in that White House before when her husband was president for 2 terms in the 90s. So she knows her way around. Donald Trump doesn't. He's winging it. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, if you listen to Donald Trump talk, he's getting his talking points from, you know, the people in his circle. He really doesn't know anything. He's learning on the fly. He's coming out there with it. But the thing is, she should be hitting him hard on this sexual assault, which I think she is, but she's not mentioning his court dates for this month and next month. Because if he's found guilty, if he's found guilty, he will go to trial, and that's going to be bad. And then he'll wind up getting impeached. He will be impeached. Because if the judge in these two cases, if he or she felt that there wasn't enough merit to bring these cases, to bring this case up for a hearing, it would not have been done. Obviously, the judges felt that it was something there. So they told him, Donald Trump, to bring his ass in court. He's got a court date on December 16th. If he doesn't show up, they're going to pick him up in handcuffs. These are just hearings from my understanding. So if the hearings get any tenser, Donald will have to stand trial. And if he's standing trial and he's voted in as president, he will be impeached. And he knows this. Maybe he doesn't, because this is Donald Trump. Donald Trump, he, Lord Almighty, master and dictator and king, Donald Trump. You know, so the media has to really bring this stuff home, because the media is not hitting hard on this. They are paying so much useless attention to Hillary's emails. It's a damn shame. Instead of this sexual predator or this rapist who's gotten the biggest scandals than anybody. He talks about putting Clinton in jail, lock her up. He's the one that should be in jail. He's the one. Donald Trump is a serial liar. I mean, this guy lie as you look at him, and he just making shit up as he goes along, attacking Clinton in some cases with no merit, but he's attacking her, and his deplorable supporters are eating it all up. You even got the KKK working to get the vote out for Trump. Paul Ryan votes for Trump after months of rejecting everything about him. It's so many people know what he is and what he's about, but they will not unendorse him, because they feel that they unendorse him, that they're going to lose more Senate seats. They're going to lose more House seats, and they don't want that. So they endorse him. I don't know why. Even though some of them don't like him, don't trust him, don't even want him in the White House, but they endorse him. They endorse him. And it's a shame. And the Republicans are pathetic, because they will not even hear Obama's Supreme Court nominee. They're not going to even hear it. They're not going to be bringing it up for a vote, because they don't want to appoint no one, no Supreme Court to the Supreme Court until Obama is out. They may not even let Clinton appoint someone if she wins. But this is crazy. This is why I say, people, you have to vote. If Clinton wins, and it's a long shot, but if she wins, you have to give her some people to work with. She will not be able to work with the Republicans, you know, because they are just as deplorable as some of Donald Trump's mainstream supporters. You have to give her somebody to work with. Give her a Democratic Senate. Give her a Democratic House of Representatives. Give her some people that can get this country moving. Lord knows Obama has not done that. He has not done it. 8 years. He hasn't done anything. Okay, you want to go back and say, well, he pulled the United States up out of the economy. That was 6-7 years ago. Give me a break. Obama has executive authority. He can sit a Supreme Court nominee through executive authority. He doesn't like to do that. He doesn't like to use his power. He wants the Republicans to come along. He wants this. Bruce Rauner, the governor, the Republican governor of Illinois, he's not ashamed to use his executive powers. Republicans aren't afraid to use their executive powers. Obama is. He doesn't like to use it. He doesn't want to use it. He gets pissed off if you ask him to use his executive powers to get things done for the country and just tell the Republicans to go straight to hell. He's Mr. Nice Guy. That's why they kick him up his ass all the time. Stop being nice with these people. You know, George Bush and Dick Cheney should have been brought up on war crimes. Obama didn't want to do that. There should have been somebody arrested for at Wall Street for the collapse in the economy 6 or 7 years ago. Obama didn't do anything about that. He did not even try to get, he did not even try and raise the minimum wage. He could have raised the minimum wage with his executive powers. Obama is corporate. He always have been corporate. Obama is Wall Street. Obama likes to go out and play golf with the rich. Obama does not give a damn about you, me, or anybody. He never did. There were times in his first term, there were times in Obama's first term that I thought the guy was a Republican, you know, and a lot of us did. We thought he had turned Republican on us. We thought we were gypped in voting in a Democrat, but we actually voted in a Republican. And as of now, his poll numbers are over 50%. I don't see why. I don't understand why. That's why he's out there campaigning with Hillary Clinton. You know, and he looks, you know, I don't know this guy. I just don't know. Okay, here we go. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio.
I've been having a great time. The Occupy Democrats Report. Look, Donald Trump for quite a while has been calling Hillary Clinton crooked Hillary. But who's the real crook? Donald Trump, without reservation, is not only crooked, he is an admitted sexual assaulter of women. What you might not know is that he's also an accused brutal child rapist. And this isn't some conspiracy theory, folks. In fact, on December 16th, Donald Trump will head to court to defend himself against allegations that he raped a 13-year-old girl at a sex party thrown by his good buddy and convicted child rapist, Jeffrey Epstein. If you want proof, here are the actual court documents from the lawsuit, which a federal court thought had enough merit to deserve a trial. The woman, who was then 13, alleges that after she was lured to one of Epstein's criminal parties for promises of a modeling contract, Donald Trump tied her to a bed, exposed himself, and began to savagely rape her. Again, a 13-year-old virgin. Court documents revealed that her loud screaming for him to stop was met with more violence and threats of killing her. If you're not familiar with Donald Trump's pal Jeffrey Epstein, consider yourself lucky. In 2008, he pled guilty to a charge of soliciting prostitution from girls as young as 14. The FBI is said to have identified about 40 potential victims. Donald Trump has nothing but praise for Epstein, telling New York Magazine in an interview, "I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's been a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side. No doubt about it, Jeffrey enjoys his social life." Ugh. Not social life, raping children. Rather than be repulsed by this aberrant behavior, Donald Trump compliments Epstein. He even compares himself to him. It's decision time, America. We clearly do not want a president with such wildly questionable morals. If true, Donald Trump belongs behind bars with child rapists. He's not fit to lead us into the next decade. On November 8th, we need to all do our part. Donald Trump must be stopped.
I totally agree. I want to thank author David Pisara for being on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you were listening and gotten a bunch of advice and information, because this show is all about making the world a better place. We talked about domestic violence. I'm going to play this clip here. It's on domestic violence, and it is riveting. It is unbelievable, but it is something that happens.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends, and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs, or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy, starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day. His dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me. Because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the 3rd one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress, and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after, because I loved him, and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident, and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach, and I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic, and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question. Why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview, I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask, because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser, because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying, as if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence. Like me, because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those 3 kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend, right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. Hey, that was great. That was great. All righty. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thanks. Thank you. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live. Yes, live from the city of Chicago. I'm near the lake in my studio. And it is 7:10 Chicago time. It's pitch black. We've got daylight savings time coming up this Sunday. It's going to get darker, become darker a lot sooner, a lot earlier. But hey, wow, this is Chicago. This is what it is. And what it is what it is. Wow. I just, but you know what? This is November 1st, from the day you might be listening to this podcast, to this radio show. And I'm going to tell you something. This is some unseasonable weather, folks. I mean, it's like 75. It feels like 80 outside. Wow. And but you know what? I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's weird. You know, I've said this from the onset that we're going to have a mild winter in the city of Chicago. And I've never lied. You know, I mean, it seems like it's starting to happen right now. But, you know, so it's great weather. I wanted to say something to my radio audience out there, my fans all around the world. I've got this letter today in the mail from Publishers Clearing House. Okay. and it said that important news regarding the mailing you will be receiving within the next 2 days. Publishing Clearing House. I'm pretty sure a lot of people out there know what I'm talking about. Okay, it says, Dear George Wilder Jr., not everyone will receive this message. It's a special alert being sent to those we like to count in as sweepstakes participants. And you are one of them. Wow, lucky me, right? And it goes on, make sure you send back your entry with the bulletin you will be receiving in just days. Oh my God. It goes on. Why? Because with an incredible amount of money at stake, you won't want to miss out on any of these chances to win $10,000 a week, every week for your whole life, for life. Double our standard weekly lifetime prize. When we take a special early look on drawing day to see if a matching winning number was returned, we will be disappointed if it went unclaimed. Someone like you, Mr. George Wilder Jr., who could probably use the money, yes, from a big win, would not want to risk letting this happen to your prize number, losing it, not returning it. So we encourage your prompt response, Mr. Wilder. Act fast, and we will assign a 5 extra bonus prize numbers to the entry you send back and from the specialty designated bulletin you receive within the next 2 days. Remember, Mr. Wilder,
You are one of the people selected to receive this letter. So make the most of it by responding in a timely manner. With the surprise event date just around the corner, this could be the lucky break you and your loved ones are hoping for. So there you go, folks. They're saying they're going to make me rich, and I've done nothing whatsoever. I've done nothing. I've entered nothing. I've done nothing. I've played no tickets. But they said they're going to make me a winner, and I do need the money. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, but I don't, these are scams. I don't know if they're scams, but this was in the mail. It just felt good to read it. Okay, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I want to thank my guest, author David Persara, for talking about domestic violence. It's something I've been wanting to get into for a long time. I've done it several times on the show, but that was maybe a year or so ago, but it was time to do a segment on domestic violence once again. And let me say something about the presidential race. Folks, if you haven't voted, get out there and vote. If you haven't made up your mind who you're going to vote for, I don't know what planet you're living on, you know, because most of us have already voted. However, there's a lot of people out there still on the limb, and they are not going to vote until the actual election day. A lot of people have already mailed in their ballots. That's great. And like I said before, early voting constitutes and benefits Democrats. So they're saying that Hillary Clinton could lose this thing, you know, simply because of the email drip by this FBI, James Comey, who had no business whatsoever sticking his nose into the election. And now that has caused a lot of momentum for Donald Trump, which he intended to do. But nobody is talking about his firing. He's not going to, Obama is not going to reprimand this guy or fire this guy. Obama doesn't do anything to anybody. I think the reason why Obama is not going to reprimand him or fire him because he's afraid of the Republicans going to kick his ass. And I'm sorry, folks, but that's just the way I feel. You can disagree. That's fine. It's a free country. But this guy needs to be reprimanded. He needs to be punished for this, but it's not going to happen because he's a Republican. He's a Republican. If this was a Democrat, the Republicans would be calling for his ouster. They would be saying he should go. This would be a scandal on a scale of 100 if this was a Democrat. I don't know. Somehow the Republicans, they have a different standard when they get caught doing something wrong than a Democrat. Democrats suffer a lot more for something they do wrong, mirroring what the Republicans has done. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, but it happens. And like as I've said earlier on into the show, Democrats are just weak. They're weak. You know, I mean, they always have been. They're gutless. And I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. I'm talking about Barack Obama. I'm going to tell you something, folks. I supported Bernie Sanders. I wish the hell he was in this. We wouldn't be where we are. We wouldn't have so much of this garbage coming out. We would not be here where we are. Bernie Sanders would be miles and miles ahead of Donald Trump. Hillary, she's got her damn problem. She voted for the war in Iraq that got 4,000 people killed. She used her private email for a public work she put herself in these situations. She put herself in these situations. And I remember distinctly when she was running for president in 2008 with Obama, you know, and she and her husband, they sounded like racists where they was, you know, coming up with all kinds of things to say about him and his color. She was lying on him, spinning on him. But hey, well, I voted for her because I still voted for her because I felt that she was better suited to be president than Donald Trump. And I still think that even though I wished she was not in the race, I wish Donald Trump, There's no doubt about it. I am missing Bernie Sanders. I've already voted and it went to Hillary, but I'm missing Bernie Sanders. Hillary is I don't know. We got two of the lamest candidates running for office, the highest office in the land. Two of the lamest. We got a possible serial rapist and a sexual assaulter by his own words, by his own words. This is just unprecedented, and we got a week to go. And I, you know, I'm like so many other people, you know, I just be super happy when this, all of this is over. It's over. Whoever takes it, they take it, you know, because it doesn't seem like nobody gives a damn about Donald Trump's rape allegations. Nobody gives a damn about he has to go to court this month and next month, November and December, on rape allegations. He's got hearings coming up. It just seems that the media is not playing on that. If this would have been a Democrat with the scandals on them, behind them, as Donald Trump, they would have ran, this Democrat would have been ran out of town. But Donald Trump is still there because the Republicans are enabling him. Corporate media is enabling him. And this guy could be president. And then actually, when he goes to court, after he wins the presidency, he could be impeached because he may be going to jail. Because if he goes to trial, he's going to be found guilty and they will take him out of there in handcuffs, out of the courtroom in handcuffs. This is just not right, folks. What's not really right is that the media is not paying much attention to this, to Donald Trump's real, real troubles. They're not staying on it enough. And the surrogates are running around on television, cable television, all over the place, denying everything, spinning and lying about everything. You ask them about Donald Trump rape charges, they'll go on to Hillary Clinton's problems, her emails. This is just loony. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me. I'm all over the place, folks. Sometimes I get a little, you know, I'm just a little heated here because the media is not doing right by Hillary and doing everything Trump wants them to do. Trump has been getting free publicity forever, you know, and for them to just not bring up his rape, court rape dates is just pathetic. It's totally, totally pathetic. And I think something's going to have to give here, folks. It's just not right. All right. I want to thank my guest once again, author David Passara. We were talking about domestic violence, and it's always, always a great subject to talk about. One of the topics I love talking about because it's happening all the time. And we have to try and find solutions to some of this stuff because this show is all about making the world a better place. It's all about making the world a better place, one show at a time. That's what it's all about, making the world a better place, one show at a time. Let's see, I'm scrolling down here, folks, seeing if I can come up with anything. And I'm looking at my feed on Facebook. And it says that I'm broadcasting live, but okay, that's not what I really am looking for. It's something that I had posted. Let's see if we can find it. Okay, go. I probably should play a clip before. Okay, corporate media is and has been ignoring Donald Trump's sexual assaults. That's no doubt. See, and his serious rape allegations, court dates, lies, and all this kind of the fact that he is unfit to be president. It is time to hold corporate media accountable for Donald Trump. Yes. Okay.
All right. Trump admits sexual assault. And they talk about Clinton emails. Trump's charity fraud. Yeah, it's a fraud. Trump calls for nuclear proliferation. Trump, they talk about Clinton emails. Well, folks, it goes on and on and on and on. It just basically saying it's unfair that all they do is talk about Clinton's emails and never any of the scandals and some of the dumbest and ignorant things that Trump says, and not reporting that he has to go to court for rape, allegedly rape. And it's just awful. It's just awful. And something has to be done. Something has to be done about this. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Show. I'm pretty sure it will. You're pretty sure it will, because I will be talking about it on this show until I turn blue in the face. I believe I'm turning blue right now. Oh, it's been fun, folks. We got about 4 or 5 more minutes left into the show. Let's do this. It's been wonderful.
Bombs begin to fall. Anyone ever saw? Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl.
Out there and do your thing, whoever you're voting for. Hopefully not Trump, because this guy is totally unfit. The election is right around the corner, and this is the election of our lives. We have to get out there and do our thing. We got to get out there and vote November 8th. This has been one of the craziest election that I have ever known. I mean, and you know, it maybe you can agree with that. Maybe it's the craziest election, presidential election that you've ever known. It is nutty. It is
unprecedented. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Join me tomorrow. We will have a guest on the show tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you.